Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to a brand new episode of Gamer Tag Radio. And Matt, this one is a good one.
This one's a good one, man.
Daily conversation. I know a lot of people love daily conversations, right? But this time, I talked to my friend, Peter Rubin. He writes at Wired. And he posted an amazing exclusive piece about the first details about PlayStation 5. He sat down with Mark Cerny at PlayStation, and they had a long conversation, man. You could go right now to wired.com and make sure to read the article. But I wanted to talk to Peter behind the scenes. How was the process, his theories, stuff that they talked about that's not in the article. It was a great conversation. So check it out right here, only on Gamertag Radio.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
Hello?
Hello, Peter?
Hey, what's up, Danny? How you doing?
What's up, man?
Far away, man.
Yeah, man. Peter, you know, this is the first time that we're actually talking, man. Like, we talk online digitally.
But that's exactly what I was going to say. I was like, I know that I remember playing COD with you guys, but yeah. No, and I don't think we've ever met in person. We haven't, right?
And I'm always traveling over there to New York all the time. So next time I travel to New York, we gotta get some drinks or something. Let's hang out and talk, man. You know, so
except it's got to be next time you come to the Bay Area, because I've been in San Francisco since Wired, really. So 2011, that's when I came out here.
Oh snap! Yeah, I'm always over there too. Yo, Peter, man. So first of all, props, man. The article,
thanks, man.
That article was all over. You basically broke the internet, man. When it got released. So that's dope.
Like, you do a story like that and you really kind of have no idea. Like, I've done stories where I had a good degree of exclusivity and I thought it was really going to make a splash. And then, you know, either it coincides with the company releasing the news themselves, like in a blog post, and then people pay attention to that. And for whatever reason, like, your story gets lost. And this was like the rare occasion where that morning, PlayStation just tweeted, basically, this is what we're doing, and then linked my story. And so by the time I woke up on the West Coast, it kind of popped.
Oh,
and
snap.
It was just kind of everywhere. It was crazy.
Yeah,
crazy to see.
That's good, though. But let me ask you, like, how this came about? Because a lot of people are wondering, like, okay, was this planned a very long time ago? Like, do you had an idea that this was going to be part of the conversation from the beginning, or not really?
I knew that we were going to have a conversation. And without saying too much, I mean, it's basically like, this is a really rare thing, right? Because companies oftentimes will know they want to do something. Either they'll have a new product or kind of a wrinkle to something that people already know about. And what's crazy is, companies keep tabs on journalists the way journalists keep tabs on companies, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, they pay attention to who writes what. They have their own kind of – they look at outlets. They look at who writes at those outlets. I have no real idea of why they came to me for this story in particular. But they did reach out, and they were like, listen, we want to start talking, basically. And I was like, I would love for you to start talking.
Mm-hmm.
So what I didn't know is what they would want to talk about. It was basically like, come on down, sit down with Mark. Mark wants to tell you about the console. And I was like, okay, I'll sit down with Mark and see what he wants to say about the console. So from that point, I knew that he would have things that he wanted to tell me. And I knew that there would be things that he would not volunteer, but that I would need to ask about.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so the balance is always getting him to talk about stuff that he's not just going to say, I can't talk about that yet. Because obviously they've got a plan that goes, whatever their plan is about talking about this console, it's going to go into next year. Right. So they, in their mind, and this is again a little insight into kind of how these companies think about this, I'm sure they have a multi-stage plan, right? They wanted to talk about specs, right? They wanted to talk about the advantages that this console would have over the current generation. What they didn't want to talk about was all the other stuff I asked about. VR, user services, thankfully, like, I asked about discs. I asked about backward compatibility. I asked about all the things that you want to know about with any console. And then there were some things that just, he was like, yeah, I can't. I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not ready to talk about that. Maybe it's not even going to be Mark who ends up talking about that. You never know. So it's just kind of about what you can get out of them in that conversation that you have.
Yeah, and you know what? I was very surprised the amount of stuff that Mark managed to tell you during the interview. I was very surprised, because usually companies will maybe they'll give you like a tease and that's it. But Mark gave you a lot of info, man, for what it is, for this early. You know, because they're not going to be at E3, so I think this is like a great introduction to start a conversation about what's coming next for PlayStation, you know? And I think you did a great job, man, on getting the scoop, you know, for the fans, you know?
I appreciate that. And like, you know, I agree with you. Like, I was surprised by some of his transparency. I mean, it had its limits, right? Mm-hmm. Like he would tell me things about the chip. And then what were we talking about? We were talking about, the solid state drive. And I was like, what kind of solid state drive are we talking about here? I was like, is this going to work with the new PCI Express 4.0 standard? And he was like, yeah, we're not talking about that yet. Right. So there were limits to what he would talk about. Right. But the fact that he gave up the numbers and the detail that he did, I thought was really interesting. And as like a lot of the conversation that was happening online that day and in the couple of days since, it's clear, obviously, you know, and I kept saying, why now, right? Why now? And they're like, why do you want to talk about this now? Why are we sitting in a room talking about this now and it not being a keynote or whatever, wherever else they might usually talk about this stuff? And the reason that he gave me was, look, there are more and more dev kits going out. So basically the idea is that eventually this stuff is going to leak, and they wanted to get ahead of that. And what you also saw emerging in the conversation online that was happening around the story was, well, we know that Microsoft's going to be at E3, right? We know Microsoft always does their Sunday night keynote or Sunday day keynote, and stands to reason that Sony knew that Microsoft was going to give up some goods about Scarlet. So they wanted to get out in front a little bit. And so it's always, especially with those two companies, as they're running down the road, they've always got one eye on who's in the lane next to them and like how they can get a little bit of ground and how they can drive the conversation. Right. Cause they, know, and I don't know, maybe they know what Microsoft is going to talk about. I have no idea. Like, there's so many rumors that fly around kind of internally within those companies about what other companies are doing. And so it could be that like, maybe they knew Microsoft was doing a solid state drive and they were like, let's get that part out there. So we start the conversation about having solid state drives and consoles, right? So they have their own kind of internal calculations about why they want to talk about this stuff. It's never as easy and organic as, hey, come sit down with us and we'll tell you anything you ask about, right? There's always kind of guardrails around it. So like I said, all you can really do is push those guardrails and try to break through in ways that they didn't expect and don't mind talking about.
Now, Mark always sounds like confident every time he presents something that they've been working on. during the conversation, you felt like, okay, I think they got this, man. They got this for next gen during the conversation. Or what?
I mean, obviously, this dude really knows what he's doing with systems, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is the guy who not rescued PlayStation, but in designing the PS4 and how it worked, he undid the difficulties of developing for the PS3. And he turned it into a system it's a lot easier to do backward compatibility with because of that kind of x86 architecture. It's easier to kind of bring devs up to speed on the next iteration of this console, which isn't to say it's going to have, you know, like the same innards that the PS4 did, but like when they did what they did with the PS3 and that cell architecture, it kind of famously made it hard to work with and to develop for. And they've even acknowledged that. So I think since Mark has been through this process where he has kind of helped design a console that was widely hailed by devs as being good to work with, he was like, I've been here before, right? I've done this dance. But at the same time, what's interesting about Mark is that he's not a typical executive, by which I mean, if you sit down with executives from companies, and I'm lucky enough in the work that I do to kind of be able to do that with some regularity. You never know who it's going to be. It's not like the CEOs or whatever, but like people who are in charge of various divisions and doing that. And part of the reason they got to that point in their careers is that they're really able to talk for a long time without saying very much, right? They're really polished, mm-hmm. but they also know how to do that kind of dance, that PR spin dance. Mark doesn't really do that. And what that changes about a conversation is that he will really think before he gives you an answer. And that's an interesting thing as a journalist and as an interviewer, to ask him a question and then have him go silent while he thinks about how to answer that. He doesn't just start talking.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the sense that you are getting a truthful and thoughtful answer, even if there's a lot of things that he's leaving out for various like classified and sensitive reasons.
Yeah.
So like I figured I wasn't getting 100% of the details of the full answer of what I was asking about, but I also could tell that he's really excited about this console. He's really proud of what they've done, and he wants the knowledge out there.
Yeah, reading this article, it and especially online, I've been checking out like the reaction from the fans. A lot of people were saying this system sounds expensive compared to like when the PlayStation 4 launched. Do you agree with that? Do you think this is true, or it's more of like, nah, they're probably going to keep it the same price as like the launch from the previous console? What do you think?
I mean, it's such a good question, because in one way you can look at consoles as being a losing proposition economically for manufacturers, right? But their money gets made through games and through first party and through even kind of trusted second party partners. So there, you know, I think there's probably, and this is, let me just preface, this is pure speculation, right? I know nothing about what they are planning to sell this for. I know that what Mark said when I asked him about it, and this wasn't in the piece, but I talked about it a little bit on Twitter, is that, you know, I asked if this is going to fall kind of within the same range that PlayStations have over time. And as we know, that's been $150, $200 range. So it's a pretty big swing. And he said, basically, I'm confident this is going to come in at a price that is attractive. And I believe the phrase is, and you can check, I put it verbatim on Twitter, in light of the advanced feature set that it has. And so what that tells me is it might come in at the higher range of what PlayStations have come in at, but I don't think it's going to be a kind of a leap past it, right? I don't think it's going to get into the like $700 range or even the $600 range, because they know that consoles have set a level of expectation, right? Where you get at the beginning of a generation, it's going to be in the like 5 to 6 range. And then as time goes on, that price drops, and then, you know, as of this current generation, then you get the mid-cycle refresh that mm-hmm. price goes back up, then it goes back down. Or you start doing consoles and iterations that are almost like a streamlined version, right? Like you do a slim thing or you cut the horsepower a little bit. And I've seen people speculating that maybe they're going to do two units and one is going to have all the crazy add-ons and the other is going to be more of a base console. I can't imagine why they would do that and why they would confuse things at the beginning. Like a reason people buy consoles and the reason consoles are have been a thriving business is because it's a standardized experience. And once you start doing two different systems that deliver a slightly different gameplay experience, then that puts developers in a bad position. Like, are you going to deliver a game that only is at its best when it's on the, you know, the elite version of the launch PS5 or whatever it's going to be called? Or do you want one that works across the lower versions and then you've got bells and whistles? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me that a manufacturer would ever do that. At least not at launch.
Well, I kind of slightly disagree because it worked. Well, for the 360, it was a little bit different. That was more about like different like hard drives, like the space. It was different. I think that was like a 20 gig or something like that, right? But
storage is one thing. But like as far as the solid state drive or the chip that's being used, like they've got this chip system that I can't imagine why would you do two variants of that? Like, why would you, you know, and where people are looking for, like, people who think this is going to be incredibly expensive are looking obviously at the combination of the solid state drive and at the idea that it supports ray tracing. And so how good is that going to be? Because, you know, there's different kinds of GPUs that can deliver that.
But it worked for Xbox now having different versions, right, of their consoles. And the rumor is that we might see multiple consoles at launch for Microsoft. So why? I mean, they could easily do that, have an expensive version and a cheaper version. So anybody have the choice? Like, there's choices there. You know, if you want the 4K version all the way, you get that. You just want the 1080, don't worry about 4K, you get that too, and it's cheaper. I think it will work for PlayStation. I think nowadays consumers are a lot smarter, man. I don't see them, they're going to get confused about like which version to buy.
Right. So on the Microsoft side of that, isn't that based somewhat on the idea that they might deliver a console that's more of like a streaming or like a cloud gaming version of the next Xbox?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's something they both are working on cloud gaming. Sony bought Gaikai a while ago. We know that Microsoft is doing this Project xCloud thing. But Microsoft has a server infrastructure that Sony doesn't, right? Microsoft has Azure. They have the backbone to deploy cloud gaming at a scale that Sony can't necessarily do by itself. Not by Sony-owned resources, right? Sony uses Amazon Web Services or whatever it is. Yeah. So based on that, I think Microsoft is in a position to do two different consoles because one of them is a completely different kind of game console, right? And it's not like a 4K versus 1080 thing. It's like, do you want a console the way you traditionally think about it, or do you want a console that's more like what Google Stadia is going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And do you want that convenience and that ability to play anywhere on any device, but it's not optimized for the living room necessarily? So like I can imagine that being the case because that's what some of the rumors are pointing to. But to me, that's a very different kind of a very different strategic decision that they would make.
Now, during the conversation with Mark, I know there was a lot of stuff that you probably didn't put in the article because maybe not the right time. Or do you have stuff saved maybe for the future in order like maybe more exclusives or. And how was the process? Like what you should put in the article? Like how was the process on that for you?
Right. So let me try to tease those apart because it's a few different questions.
Yeah.
So the answer to the first question is, and a lot of people were hitting me up about this, about the idea that I left stuff out. I even saw people saying that I had like confirmed things that were nowhere in the piece and that I'd never mentioned. Like I saw someone be like, DualShock 5, you know, 30 hours battery life and confirmed. He confirmed. I was like, I didn't mention the controller at all.
Yeah.
So the internet is the internet, right? So things go through that game of telephone, things end up getting attributed back to me or the article that I wrote, that hey, that the rumor mill got kind of hitched to a thing that I wrote when they don't necessarily have that thing in common. So as far as like things that we talked about that didn't make it into the piece, I mean, no, like basically if I asked him something and the answer was, I can't talk about that yet, then that didn't go into the article in detail. It basically got into the fact that there was like a lump acknowledgement. Like he hasn't talked, like if you notice user services, price, games, all that stuff is stuff that I asked about. But there was no answer. And I'm not just going to like quote his, I'm not ready to talk about that five times, right? So it kind of gets all pushed into this kind of blanket thing that there's a lot of stuff that they're not ready to talk about yet.
Yeah.
So in the sense that like I didn't detail the part of the interview where that happened, I would say that's about the only stuff, because it wasn't fruitful in any way. And as far as the part of the question that was, did he tell you anything that you're kind of holding on to? The answer to that is also no. Like if there was anything that came out of that conversation that was interesting, I would have put it in there. The only reason that like when I talked to, so after after we published the article and I had said, look, they're not talking about price yet, I saw so much speculation about price. And I was like, well, I did ask him about that. I can just tell people exactly what he said to me, like if that's helpful. And so that got a little bit of burn too, because it was just like a behind the scenes featurette on a Blu-ray or whatever, right? It was just like for like the true, like the people who really want to know, here's exactly what he said. And then weirdly enough, I just saw a couple articles about just that. And that, you know, that's what happens with news, right? Is like the, you know, you can tweet something and then that tweet gets turned into articles. So I saw breaking news
right there.
Yeah. Like I saw Polygon is like went into like that little three tweet thing where I recounted the conversation with Mark, like that got its own piece. I was like, that's not an article. Like, don't write an article about that. Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously do if you want to. I don't mean it's bad journalism, but it's just like, it's crazy sometimes to watch what goes from being just information that gets shared around to being information that gets turned into an article. And so what's the third part of that question was about like future stuff.
Yes.
Kind of. I don't know. I mean, oftentimes, you know, it's what's difficult about journalism is when you get an exclusive opportunity like this, or an opportunity where you have this exclusive story, it comes with kind of a sense of tension, meaning that I'm excited that we get the exclusive, but I'm also very aware of the fact, and you have to be aware of this fact all the time as a journalist, that they want you to tell the version of the story they want you to tell, if that makes sense, right?
Yes, yes.
So they're going to give me I walk into a club and they're like, here, enjoy the club. And I know that what's back in the VIP section is the stuff they don't want to talk about yet. So you want to get back in the VIP section. And so you try to get back in the VIP section, but you also want to acknowledge in the piece that you write that you are thinking critically about the information they're giving, right? You're not just accepting it at face value. You're not just swallowing it and then parroting it out as part of your article. And so that goes into the interview as well, right? Is you want to kind of push back. You know, I asked at some point, he mentioned that he was working on Death Stranding, the Kojima game. And I was like, so, you know, is that going to be on the next gen console? And it was a really long pause. And then it kind of led to this conversation where, a Sony publicist who's in the room kind of jumped in and said,
"Here's what we're saying. You can't answer this."
Well, not, basically she was like, this is what we've been saying about Death Stranding. And he basically said, and this isn't getting into the piece, he was basically like, well, there's your headline. because he knew that the fact that he had hesitated and they had hesitated and they had kind of inadvertently telegraphed the idea that obviously this wasn't going to be just a PS4 title.
Yeah, yeah.
And he knew that that was news. And so I tried to get at that. And by getting at that is one of those ways where you alleviate that tension within yourself by getting at the part of the story that they didn't necessarily want to want you to get, if that makes sense. So that's that glimpse of the VIP section. Huh. You got past the rope for a second, you bring that back and you're like, this is like, I'm reporting this. You don't just take what they give you and then pass it along to the reader. That's irresponsible. That's just being in someone else's pocket. And so the balancing act is always being somebody who they trust to be a reporter with integrity and a good enough writer to tell the story. And also they respect that you are going to do it your way. You're not just going to be, their hand isn't up your back, right? Like a mannequin or like a ventriloquist dummy. So it's being a reporter and it's being a journalist, and kind of having it both ways. So that's a really long-winded, and I apologize.
It's all good. It's all good. It's a conversation, man. It's a conversation, right? Man, so
so that all goes back to the question of, do you think you're going to like have any more exclusives like this? Do you think you're going to have, there's going to be more articles about what they're planning?
Mm-hmm.
All I can say is that I try to write articles that make me happy as an independent-minded journalist, like as a reporter. And if that's something that they appreciate, that they might come back and say, maybe there's another bite of this apple to have. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is I'm going to take it back like 6 years.
Yes.
And so 6 years ago, Microsoft kind of came to the office and they were like, hey, so we want to talk about the next Xbox and we kind of want to do it a different way. We just, you know, we always used to try to get magazine stories and we always tried to do this and that. And we kind of want to just do a big splashy like web story and like a full exclusive and all this. And just by a total fluke, I was in the room for that meeting. And as things shook out, I was the person who then went and reported and wrote the first story about the Xbox One.
I remember that. I remember that too.
And so that kind of, at the time, that broke the internet in a small way as well. Like that was because it came out while Microsoft was doing an event, and I don't think it was an E3 event. I think they did something else.
Oh, they did it was in Seattle a month before E3. It was like in May.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I remember that.
May.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting about that is you do an article like that, every other company reads it. Every other company sees that you are able to kind of report and tell a story in a compelling way that people enjoy reading. And what matters to them more than anything is that piece gets around. It doesn't get around, doesn't get shared because you turned around, took everything they told you and wrote it up like a press release. It gets shared around because there's a story there. And there's something to read there. Mm-hmm. And that story includes tension and uncertainty and stakes and all these other things. So companies see a story like that go around.
Mm-hmm.
And then like they keep in mind who writes that story. And so, you know, that has kind of followed through a bunch of, not just in gaming, but like I write a lot about VR and stuff like that. And the more stories you write in a given subject, you develop authority on that subject. And then your authority on that subject also helps you kind of get more interesting stories in that way. Like, you know, not just the conversations that you have with people at events and at various kind of check-ins and meetings and interviews. But there is a sense that the way you tell the story, they want you to tell your story about the thing they're doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it all kind of goes back to that thing where, it's not a press release, right? It's a reported story, but you also have to be in the room to get access to it. And I saw one, a friend of mine mm-hmm. tweeted something about Sony's strategy with the story. They were like, obviously, you know, it was really smart of Sony. They knew that everyone was going to be talking about Xbox soon and they wanted to get ahead of that. And this is my friend and old coworker, Chris Kohler. He said, and they also know that if they don't talk about it soon, someone like Kotaku or Eurogamer or whoever is going to come and get the story another way.
Yeah, I see that. I can see
that. And that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's absolutely true. I don't deny that. Like, Jason Schreier gets all these incredible scoops and these great stories, and people who are deeply sourced among developers will always get kind of wind of these things, and some of the leaks that come out are because, you know, people hang out on GitHub and watch engineers putting up code that might be for this or that. And, you know, people get stories in such incredible enterprising ways. I don't write only about games, right? And so I'm never going to be as deeply sourced as for that kind of reporting like mm-hmm. Jason Schreier might be. I would never try to be. I love the work that he does, right? It's great seeing him go and get the stories about how a game was doomed from the beginning for all these reasons, and developers knew that, and, you know, what he did. Was it about Anthem that he did that?
Yeah, it was Anthem. Anthem, yep.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
That's not a piece I would ever write. That is a piece that he's so good at, and I love reading them. Mm-hmm. But back to Chris's point was that part of Sony's calculation in this is how close is this information from getting out other ways? Because you always want to be in control of the leak. So the way to make it not leak is to leak it your way. And so the way to leak it your way is to go to a writer or reporter and say, we want to talk about this.
Yep.
Right? So yeah. It's, you know, it's all part of that crazy dance. And it happens in every industry. It happens, obviously, in gaming. It happens in every part of consumer electronics. It happens in sneakers. Everything.
Yeah, and you know, it's crazy that this. I never thought about it when you released the article. I wasn't even thinking about it like that. And now, the more you're talking about, I'm like, all right, yeah, it makes a lot of sense, because if the dev kits is going to go out, might as well just talk about it now and control a message. And now, once the dev kits are out, that's it. Any developer talks to another website, like, that's it. It's done. Like, it's already out there, you know? So I think that was very, very smart from them.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And even though those developers have all signed NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, it always gets out some kind of way, right? Someone says something careless. Someone tweets something. So, you know, code gets put, like, something gets put somewhere. There's a, you know, someone takes a photo in an office and there's something in the background. You know, I've written stories where kind of really early, I wrote a story about Oculus back before Facebook bought them, and really early. And we took some photos in their office. And one of the photos, people were like, look in the background. Blah, 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 blah. And like, anything becomes grounds for speculation, right? And so for any company, the quest is always, like you said, is to control the message.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. and so the kind of, I keep saying tension, but it really is. The tension is between who controls that message and how do you convey that message without compromising your kind of integrity, if that makes any sense. Like, journalistically, the ethics of journalism, like, is you don't go in there, record everything they say, and then come back out and write it exactly like they say. Like, you quote where it's necessary, and you quote where someone gives good context, but you analyze it yourself. You frame things up yourself, which is why I took pains in the piece to be like, look, cloud gaming is a very real thing. And even though Sony isn't copying to it, it's going to be really important in the next generation. Because to me, they're not as well situated to take advantage of that as Google and Microsoft are. Largely because they just don't have that kind of server infrastructure. But yeah, it was really, I agree with you. It was really smart of them to do it that way, because they knew that that the kind of veil of secrecy around what they were working on was only going to get more porous.
Yeah, and it's 2 months before E3. So my question to you, right after this interview, or maybe during the conversation, did they hint at anything about saying anything during E3, or just keep it silent until next time in the future after E3, maybe to start having more conversation about this, or what?
I mean, I said, so you're not going to be at E3. I said, have you ever not been at E3? They said, no, this is going to be the first time. And I was talking about like the keynote.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And they said, and the way they said it, and I didn't put this in the article because it wasn't exactly relevant and it wasn't particularly newsworthy. They were like, we don't want to do that if we don't have a lot of great games to show. Like, we don't want to get up and talk about a CPU in a really abstract way, because that's not what our fans are there for. They want to know what great games are coming out. And unless we can deliver that, we don't want to. Now, obviously, there's some spin in that, right? That's them saying they don't want to show next-gen titles. That's them saying they don't want the pressure to show what the console is going to look like. That's them saying, you know, it's basically they don't want to go because they're in that weird middle ground where one generation is winding down and another is spinning up. And what do you do?
Hmm.
What do you do in that case? Like E3 in 2012 was kind of similar, except in the sense that we didn't know yet about Xbox One, we didn't know yet about PS4. All that stuff came out in early 2013. So 2012, and the timing is a little weird for this too, right?
Very weird. That's
in the sense that like the PS4 unveil was in February
of 2013. And I think Xbox was in May?
Exactly.
Yeah, right, May of 2013,
Yep. So PS4 did their thing at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York. And then, like you said, Microsoft did their thing in Seattle. And then when they got to E3, I think with PS4, they never showed the console, right? They just talked about it. So when E3 came, I think the pressure was on for them to show the console. Whereas with Microsoft, they had already shown it. So they come to E3. And isn't that when they talked about like Quantum Break and TV and entertainment and like what the next generation was going to be like? So they went a whole different way. It was about games, but it was also heralding the arrival of the Xbox as an entertainment machine rather than just a game console. Obviously, we know that didn't work out exactly the way they planned, but they tried to really do a pivot for that generation. PS4 didn't. They just wanted to right the ship. Like, yeah, PS3 sold a ton, but with PS4, they needed to kind of bring things back to normal in some way, get away from the Ridge Racer thing.
Yeah, man. So my last thing, man. Your thoughts, man. What you think about Xbox, man? Like, what's next for them? Do you think they're gonna show some type of games for next gen and during this E3, or you think they're gonna wait?
A good question.
Because now that the conversation is going now. That it already started with PlayStation 5. Do you think the pressure is on for them or what?
I think the pressure was on Sony, and they alleviated some of that pressure. I think Microsoft, my guess is they're going to stick with their plan, which is to do some stuff about Scarlet, some stuff about cloud gaming, just like little things. Some things like that, you know what I mean? Where to give, but not do the whole thing, because I don't think I would be incredibly surprised if the next Xbox was out in 2019. I can't imagine that being the case. I think we're looking at 2020 for both of them.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to do the kind of keynote event version of what Sony did with One Story, right? Which is to talk a little bit about what Scarlett is going to be able to do. I don't think they're going to show next-gen titles. And I wonder if what I think they should do is get more into their vision for cloud gaming while stressing that it doesn't affect that there will be a straight living room console as well, right? Because like they are really uniquely situated. Google's only play is to take the console out of the living room. PlayStation, Sony's best play is to keep the console in the living room. Microsoft is kind of able to do both. And if they can get across that they can do both, that they can be like the Switch, but without a single device, like you leave the house, you know, play an incredible Xbox game on your Xbox, then leave the house and continue that game on your phone, then that's a really distinctive advantage for the next generation. And because they gave up some of the goods about xCloud late last year, I would imagine that they're going to do more about it now. Yeah. So my guess is that's what we're going to hear from them. I don't know if they're going to cop to like what the rumors about them having two different consoles. I don't think they're going to go there. I think they're going to talk about a console, and I think they're going to talk in some way, not super detailed. And I think they're going to talk about cloud gaming. But I think that it's going to be without a lot of specifics. I think they're going to probably have a bunch of games from this generation, and that might also have a life in the next generation. But they're in a really good place right now with the Xbox One X, right? Like, it's really helped them make up some ground this generation with the idea that it's kind of done away with the idea that it's a lower powered console, because the X is now a little bit more powerful, I think, than the Pro. So I would be surprised if they didn't try to wring everything they could out of the last year of this generation by like really leaning into the stuff that is their strong suit.
Yeah, and you know what? If Microsoft listening, I think it's time to hit up Peter for an article in May, an exclusive, right?
If only, man. That would be sick. If only.
Nah, man. Nah, Peter, it was good, man. It was a great conversation, man. It was a lot of fun. And great job in the article, man. How was the feeling? How was the feeling seeing, the article everywhere, especially on Twitter? It was trending for like a whole day, I think.
Was it trending? I never looked. Yeah. I mean, I was on Twitter all day.
Dude, it was trending all day long.
That's crazy. Yeah. I will say that, writing a story that really drives the news is it's a gratifying thing, right? And like seeing Twitter do what Twitter did that day was a really crazy experience for me. I don't think I've ever, I wrote that Xbox piece back in 2013, but Twitter wasn't quite then what it is today.
Yeah. It was there, but not like now. I think it got more mainstream and, it started it started way before 2013, but now it's a lot more.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But like what it was in 2013 and what it is in 2019 are different enough that it was a very different experience. For me, being watching what happened with that article.
Yeah, I'm saying, man, you're building your resume, so that's good. That's good.
Trying to, man. Always trying to.
All right, Peter, man. But if I ever travel there in the West Coast, man, I definitely will hit you up so we could.
Most definitely.
Hang out,
yeah,
man.
I would have said E3, but I don't think I'm gonna be there this year.
Oh, you're not? Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll let you know.
You already have the scoop of PlayStation 5, so you don't need to go there anymore. You're good.
They're not gonna be there, exactly. And the Xbox, and I think Xbox streams their keynote, so
yeah, just stay there.
Like, that's about the only thing going there. I mean, other than seeing games and stuff, but being in San Francisco, it's easy enough to be able to like see demos and keep tabs on things. So that's good.
Definitely. Definitely. All right, man. All right, Peter. But thanks a lot, dude.
All right, man.
All right, man. Take care. Peace.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right. Shout out to Peter. Yo, Peter, once I go over there to the West Coast, man, we're definitely going to hang out, man. Definitely. Definitely, man. So head over to gamertagradio.com, post your comments and feedback, and, yeah, just spread the word about GTR, man. Let us know. Email us. fanmail@gamertagrail.com or give us a call, 76-273-7GTR. That's 76-273-7GTR. Or you could also write, go to join our Discord, or you could send us voicemails, all that. And I'll definitely will play on the show. All right, until next time, thank you for listening. Hope you like this episode of Daily Conversations, only here on Gamer Tag Radio. Take care, y'all. Peace. I'm out.
Thanks for listening to Gamer Tag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.